Webster's Dictionary defines compliance as the action or fact of complying with a wish or command. This is The Compliance Guide.
The Compliance Guide.
As a healthcare provider or healthcare professional, navigating the muddy waters of compliance can get tricky.
And that's why we're here.
Helping you mitigate risk while increasing your profitability. This is The Compliance Guide. Now, here's your host, Sean Weiss.
All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of The Compliance Guy. As always, let me begin by saying thank y'all for tuning in, logging on, and just hanging out with me for a little while. Today, I am joined by a special guest. Her name is Dr. Carolyn Ward. She is a former primary care physician, and I know we're going to talk all about that because we've had a couple of chuckles before we actually began recording the podcast today. But Dr. Ward has taken over as the director of clinical strategy for an organization called Particle. We're going to talk all about Particle and what they do, but really the focus of our discussion today is talking about interoperability and the obstacles that arrive from that. You know, I've had a chance to speak with Dr. Ward prior to our doing the podcast today. She's a very dynamic young lady, and I could say young lady because I know she's much younger than I am. and people are always amazed when I tell them that I'm 50 years old, and they're like, "No way." And I'm like, "Listen, man, that's just Botox and alcohol." So, you know, so anyways, Dr. Ward, it's great to see you again. It's great to have you on the podcast. Thanks for carving out what I know is, you know, carving out time from what I know is a very busy schedule to hang out with me and our guests for just a little while today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yep. And we will not hold it against you that you come from the state of California. And, I will say this. I know you're in Orange County. That's Southern California. I actually have a good friend, Terry Fletcher, who does a podcast with me on Tuesdays called Hashtag Terry Tuesday on The Compliance Guy. And she's in Southern California as well. And I have several friends that are now retired physicians in the area. So, it's always interesting when I meet physicians who decided that they want to hang up their white coat to do something else in healthcare that's not patient forward or patient facing, right? Meaning clinical care, but it's process improvement. It's engaging in operations and efficiency and value-based care and clinical standards. And, you know, I had a great discussion not too long ago with an emergency room physician who decided, you know, I want to get into another aspect of artificial intelligence and, you know, find, you know, ways to bring efficiency to other practicing physicians. But I've had enough. You know, I don't want to deal with the insurance companies anymore. I don't want to deal with the patients at this point right now. I just want to help physicians because I've burnt out on clinical care, but I have all of this knowledge, right, from all of these years of doing these things. And, you know, I've found my passion in computers, or I found my passion in business, and that's what I want to pursue. And who can blame you, right? Because the industry is upside down. It's sort of a disaster, if you will. So let me pause there. And naturally, the first question I want to ask, because I'm nosy, why did you leave the practice of medicine?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a question I get a lot. In order to actually practice medicine, you have to essentially invest a lot of money in a lot of years. So it's definitely not a decision that people take lightly. And, you know, one of the things we were just chatting about before this is the fact that typically the reason why people go into medicine to become physicians, almost always the cited reasons are they want to help people. They want to do something that's people facing. They want to do something that's intellectually stimulating. And I think that kind of gets you into the door. When you actually go to practice within the United States health system, what you really realize is that this job is primarily computer screen facing. And you spend very, very little amount of your time actually talking with patients, understanding who they are, and then getting them to understand their own health so that they can take actions that will help them in the long run. A lot of medicine, even the parts that are people facing, are unfortunately about applying quick Band-Aid solutions or basically trying to manage something after it's happened instead of being proactive and prevention of what we know might come down the road, right? And so I think there's essentially two types of people, and we need both of them in the system, which is essentially the people who, 100% of people understand their problems in the healthcare industry, I think, when you work in it. And there's a group of people who are like, you know what? I'm just going to go heads down. I'm going to take care of the patient in front of me. And I want to help as many people as I can during my career and during my lifetime, one-on-one in that sense, right? And there's another group of people that say, like, there has got to be a better way to do this. I want to work on the system as a whole and see what can we do to make this better, faster, more efficient, more effective. We need both. I obviously am highly incentivized to keep doctors in the healthcare system so that when I'm old and I need somebody to take care of me, I want there to still be physicians around, right? I don't want every person to be like, I've burnt out. I'm going out of the healthcare system, do something else, for sure. But I think we also need that.
But you know, the truth is, and not to cut you off, but the truth is, not only are we seeing the burnout, we're just not seeing people applying to medical schools. And as a result, what have the medical schools done? They've removed the requirement to take an MCAT. I mean, who would have ever thought, right? I mean, who would have ever thought that you do not have to take an MCAT to get into medical school? I mean, it's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that people are trying to address from the training standpoint, essentially, is that by 2034, we could have up to 124,000 physician shortage, like 124,000 physicians that we need that we don't have. And 2034 is only a little over a decade away. It's not that far away. And when you think about how long physician training actually takes, that's basically the class that starts
a
now,
cycle.
Right? Yeah, it's basically a full cycle. And there is no way that you can increase enough residency spots, increase enough medical school spots to fill this need. This is a gap that is only going to get bigger as our population continues to age. And that's ultimately one of the reasons I chose to work at Particle, actually, is because we know in many other industries that the ability to leverage data and technology together has allowed these industries to scale very wildly. And healthcare is a very backwards industry in many sense. But if there's any industry, any sector that needs the ability to scale, it's got to be our healthcare system, right? And so I ultimately kind of took a step back and said, look, even if I saw, let's say, 30 patients a day for, let's say, a 45-year career, that's still a very limited amount of people that I would have impact on. And the way that I actually spend time with them today, a lot of it is in and out the door. I'm going to be seeing you in a month for the same thing, I know, because we never had a chance to really sit down and talk about the underlying reasons why you're coming to my office with these issues. And so that's ultimately why I took a step back and I said, there has to be a better way to do this. And not only does there have to be a better way, like, we need to find this way and we need to find it really quickly.
So let's talk about what Particle actually does, right? So I know that Particle, you know, was founded by two guys, if I'm not mistaken, Troy Bannister, and I'm trying to think of the other gentleman. Is it Jason?
So we had two co-founders, Troy Bannister and Dan Horvat.
Dan, that's who it was.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
And they actually originally founded Particle on the belief that patients should have access to their own healthcare records, which sounds like a really obvious statement, but in actuality and in practice today is not as simple. In fact, because of how difficult it is to get access to your own personal medical records and the regulations that often kind of stand in the way, our company has actually taken the first step at going into the treatment space and first allowing providers who are taking care of you to have access to your medical records, which also sounds like a really obvious statement and something that should be very easy to facilitate. But the truth is that anytime you go into a doctor's office, you're filling out 5 to 10 pieces of paperwork, often with a pen and paper. They're then sending a fax over to your previous physician. They're getting a fax back of your previous medical records. They are scanning that as a PDF into their health record. So when you think about the way that that data is being transmitted, it's extremely manual, and there's very low what I call data capture, which is to say, as a physician, I'm probably asking for your cardiologist record, maybe because I want to see your last EKG, right? I get like a 200-page fax back from your cardiologist, and I now have to sift through that and look for the one piece of information that I want. That, first of all, takes a lot of time. The second thing is, those other 199 pages probably contain some useful information that is going to live locked in a PDF, because a PDF is not a searchable, easy way to use data, right? It's like locked in this PDF document that gets attached somewhere in your medical, in your electronic medical record, never to be opened again. So as a physician, I'm not even able to leverage the other 199 pages of information that I did in fact receive. Because the only way to do that would be for me personally to read all 199 pages and transcribe that manually into the EMR.
So in thinking about operational efficiencies, you know, is it that the system is capturing what would be the pertinent relative information, and it's eliminating duplicate information so that it's streamlining the amount of documents that are actually being brought into the system? Is it using any kind of a clone sleuth to look for repeatability or things like that?
Yeah.
I think, you know, because I understand APIs and I understand, you know, these things, you know, because I live in this world, right? A lot of our folks who are sitting out here listening to us today may be thinking to themselves, okay, so I understand we're talking about faxes and dropping faxes and this and that, but really, what is the bottom line from an operational efficiency standpoint? Really, what is it that I and my providers need to be aware of to help us understand that there's a better, more efficient way to do what we're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So essentially what we have created at Particle is a single API call that connects into the national networks that all of these different electronic medical records, Epic, Cerner, even like the proprietary EMRs of different telehealth, digital health companies are connected into. We go out and we look for, let's say, Carolyn Ward. I put in my demographic information. We go out and search the networks for all of Carolyn's information. So I moved to California 3 years ago from New Jersey. So a lot of my medical history is in New Jersey. And so by passing over that information, we're able to go and get my OBGYN information from New Jersey, right? My new primary care information from California. We take all of that information, we merge it together. To your point, we deduplicate it, because there's probably a ton of duplicates from all these disparate health systems coming together, right? We deduplicate it, we unify it, and we pass back to the provider one single unified file of all of Carolyn's medical history from all different facilities, urgent cares, primary care, specialists, hospitals, right? Lab information, every kind of clinical information you would expect to find in an electronic health record, we have access to, and we pass that back. That being said, that's still a lot of information. And so what we are really working on now is, how do we lift the insights from that information in a way that is useful, instead of just saying, yes, you now have access to everything that's in there in a standardized, normalized, deduplicated way. But how do you actually start to show providers, like, these are the pieces of information that you actually need right now for this particular workflow, right? And so we actually, all of these networks, they pass data back in a format called CCDA, which is also not super usable, but it is the format that everybody uses. So at least we're standard on that. We transform it into something called FHIR, F-H-I-R, which essentially helps us to put these data elements into buckets, so that you can start to pull, okay, I know I want some information from the medication bucket. I want some piece of information from an encounters bucket. So it starts to make the data a little bit more usable. And then we also offer our customers like a flattened JSON format as well, which is really great for analytics because it's really easy to use. It's a tabular format, a data format that like almost everybody is used to using, so that you can start to like customize what data elements you want to pull in to an algorithm or diagnostics or something like that.
So let me ask you. So I just came out of last week a big medical malpractice case. And as I think about Particle and what you all are doing, I wonder if one of the pieces, and maybe you guys are already doing this, but I wonder if one of the pieces that is available or could become available is looking at diagnoses that are listed in the patient's medical records to alert a physician to say, the patient was previously seen by another provider who diagnosed the patient with XYZ, you know, disease or whatever. Because in the case, and I want to be careful because this is still a pending case, but in the case that I came out of, the patient was seen in an emergency treatment facility and then followed up with their primary care and gave bits and pieces of information, but it's like putting a jigsaw puzzle together, right? And while you may have the border of the puzzle, it's the pieces inside that tell the story that we're missing. And without those pieces, clinicians can only make determinations using their clinical judgment based on what they're observing, what the patient's telling them. And as a result, sometimes things don't necessarily get captured, right? Leading to a poor outcome, leading to a misdiagnosis, leading to death, unfortunately. So I wonder if, and if you're already doing this, go, Sean, shut up. We're already doing that. But if you're not, I wonder if the next stage of evolution is to be able to go through and look for diagnoses that have actually been listed. That way you know if there's systemic disease process, right? Diabetes, hypertension, COPD, CAD, CHF, whatever it is. These could be contributing factors to ongoing healthcare issues that the patients are having. And now the physician or clinician is getting a more rounded picture of the patient's overall health process to be able to more accurately create a plan of care going forward. I mean, is that what you're already doing, or is that
exactly
something that's in the works?
Exactly. That is something we're already doing. And what you're really talking about is what we talk about as like our data advantage, right? The first thing you really want to do is understand all the clinical data that's being generated by a patient, right? You need to build any analytics, any insight you want to lift should be based off of that comprehensive data foundation. Because to your point, if you're missing a few key pieces of information, that can make your guess of what that puzzle image looks like in the end completely different, right? You can imagine, and you know, a jigsaw puzzle is actually like an internal metaphor we use quite a bit, where even if you have just two or three pieces missing, when you look at the picture as a whole, those two or three pieces could drastically change what that actual image is, right? And so in diagnostics, and also even for a diagnosed disease, when it comes to like picking a treatment or management decisions, right? If you do not have all the slices of the pie when it comes to your patient's data, it's really hard as a clinician to be effective and confident in your decision-making, right? Medicine is always in a gray zone. You're never going to be 100% black and white. There's always going to be a little bit of like intelligence that you got to put into it. And like, it's all about like risks and ratios. But the more we can fill in those gaps, the better your decision-making will be, the more confident you'll be able to make that decision. And ultimately, we are able already today for our customers, we do pull that comprehensive list of diagnoses, let's say, right? Because you as a primary care physician want to know if the cardiologist diagnosed heart failure in your patient, for sure. If the endocrinologist diagnosed some diabetic complication in your patient, right? All of those things make a really big difference when you're looking at the full patient picture. And, you know, you mentioned value-based care. When you think about the value-based care model, it's all about understanding the amount of risk you're taking on for each patient. There is no way to understand that risk if you do not understand what is actually happening across the entire healthcare ecosystem for your patient.
You know, in listening to you, I mean, this is one of the reasons why we call it the practice of medicine, right? Mm-hmm. Or why we talk about the fact that medicine's an art, not an exact science. But as you bring more information gathering technology into it, you start to speak to more of a scientific approach, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we have more clinical relevant data on the patient. I mean, especially our aging population, right?
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, like for me, I have an 82-year-old mother who has dementia. And, you know, I'll talk to her at 10 o'clock in the morning. And by 10:20, she's texting me saying, you know, all the same things that we just talked about on the phone, because she didn't remember that we just got done talking about that. But imagine when she goes to her physician and, mm-hmm. you know, she's lived in Florida, then she lived in Georgia, she lived in two different parts of Georgia. Now she's back in Florida, and the, you know, she was with Piedmont Health System and then Emory University. And now she's with, you know, whatever the health system is in, you know, Boca Raton, Florida. You know, these systems don't have a universal way to communicate. So, you know, Emory doesn't share information with Piedmont. Piedmont doesn't share information with Jackson Health System in Florida, whatever it is. So, I could see the value to a program like yours, where it goes out and it triggers a response based on demographic information to be able to capture everything. What are the next phases of clinical integration for Particle, and how are you taking your API to the next level?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, I mean, the first thing that we really did was just aggregating all this data, right? Which is obviously very powerful in and of itself. What we're really doing now is creating a full platform with some analytics built on top. So the first thing I'll say about the platform itself is essentially creating technical capabilities that make this data as useful as possible and as flexible as possible when you want to integrate with us. So we want to transform it into different data formats so you can ingest it however it is that your system ingests data, right? We want you to be able to have a really clean record. So it's, you know, not a bunch of duplicates you have to sort through. You know, we talk about like the diffs or the deltas every time you query and you look for information. You want to know what's net new. You don't want to get the whole kit and caboodle again, right? You know, so that we're really trying to take a lot of the onus of transforming the data off of healthcare organizations, because we know that they don't have the technical capabilities in-house often to do this. I personally believe that all healthcare organizations in the future will have a robust data science team, but we know that that is not the case today. And so we want healthcare organizations to spend their time taking care of patients and not data, right? So we want to make that as easy as possible. On top of this platform, what we are now building on top of it is a bunch of data products so that we can start to look at, based off of this comprehensive data, what are some ways that we can start to add some analytics to this data to make it useful, to kind of go a step beyond so that our customers aren't having to do a lot of that themselves, right? So an example I'll give is medication reconciliation. Super common workflow that every single organization does that provides healthcare. What that process is to say, hey, I want to look at all the medications that you've been prescribed and confirm what it is you're actually supposed to be taking. If you think about that, the only way to actually do that is to understand every medication that any provider you're seeing has prescribed to you. And the truth is that most organizations only ever see a slice of that pie. And so if I have the meds from your primary care physician, I have the meds from your endocrinologist, that's great. I can reconcile that and say, hey, per these two providers, you're supposed to be taking these five medications. But if I don't also have the list from your cardiologist, that list is not complete. It doesn't actually make sense for the patient. We also know that one of the major reasons people don't adhere to their medications outside of not being able to afford them is that they don't understand what medications they're supposed to be on. And a super risky time for this is when they come out of the hospital, where in the hospital, yeah, all of your medications get changed. You come out, you don't really know what are you supposed to be taking compared to what you were prescribed new, what was in the hospital, what was before the hospital. And so that process we essentially enable because we're able to go out to all the providers that a patient is seeing, pull every medication that's been prescribed, deduplicate it, put it into one list, and pass that back so that your provider at point of care is able to say, I see that I prescribed you lisinopril 10 milligrams, but your cardiologist prescribed it at 20 milligrams. Or I see that I prescribed you lisinopril at 10 milligrams and your endocrinologist prescribed ramipril at 5 milligrams, which is the same as two different medications, but they're in the same class. And so you shouldn't be on both of those clearly, right? So those kind of catches are what our product allows you to do because we have that comprehensive data advantage. And ultimately, it's what you need to perform at point of care to prevent poor patient safety outcomes, medication adherence outcomes, so that patients know exactly what they're supposed to be taking so that they will go ahead and take them. And the truth is, in our healthcare system today, every individual provider doesn't usually know what a single patient is actually supposed to be taking.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think what happens, especially with people elderly, that have been in the hospital, you know, they get sundowners, right? Mm-hmm. You know, because especially after a period of time, you know, having an extended stay in the hospital. And, you know, if they were self-reliant prior to going into the hospital, where they knew what medications to take, how many times per day, what time did they take it, what was their schedule, all that stuff, whether they used the pill box or they had prepackaged, you know, pills, you know, you're guaranteed when a patient comes out of a hospital to probably have 1 to 2, maybe 4 more prescriptions that you're adding to the regimen, depending on what put them into the hospital in the first place. But I think about patients, even myself, right? You know, I had my health scare about 4 years ago with my heart, and, you know, I'd never taken any kind of medications prior to that other than, you know, once a year I needed a Z-Pack or, you know, I needed, you know, an antibiotic or something like that, right? Or, you know, if I got nauseated, I took a Zofran or something like that. And then all of a sudden I went from taking nothing to taking, you know, 6 different pills, some of them twice per day, right? Because you get stents in your heart. So now you got to take Brilinta and you got to take Carvedilol and Amlodipine and Lisinopril and Atorvastatin and baby aspirins. And, you know, then you hit a certain age and now, you know, all the foods you were able to eat in your 20s and 30s now don't play nicely in the sandbox with you anymore. So now you're taking proton pump inhibitors and you're taking, you know, all these other things. You know, it's so funny. I went to dinner last week with 2 of my very best friends, and I've not seen them for 10 years. And people are like, well, how could they be your very best friends if you haven't seen them in 10 years? Just trust me. They're 2 of my very best friends. We were able to talk on the phone on a pretty regular basis. And it was so funny because we got into this conversation about like GERD and, you know, other medical things that afflict people when they hit 50 or, you know, in your 40s. And my buddy looked at me and he goes, could you imagine us having this conversation in our 20s? And we just stopped and laughed and we're like, that's when you know you're getting old, is when, you know, you're not talking about going out to the clubs and going out for dinners at 10 o'clock at night and just getting your evening started to, I went to bed at like 9 o'clock last night and I was up by 7 and, you know, I had to go to the bathroom 3 times in the evening and, you know, I had to go drink a glass of milk for my heartburn. And, you know, it's crazy, that cycle. I don't know. I sometimes I go off the rails, Doc, so you got to pull me back in. I apologize. But here's the thing, you know, in thinking about the medications, right, compliance with medication is so important. Non-compliance, you know, I bet one of the biggest issues a lot of physicians talk about, especially with Medi-Cal, Medicaid, CHIPS program patients, is non-compliance. How great would it be to have at your disposal information about things that were prescribed for a patient, diagnoses that were given to a patient, you know, from another state, from another provider, from a subspecialist or a specialist or a primary care doctor to help you put that piece of the puzzle together. So now you have a more accurate, complete look into the patient's past medical history. I mean, that's where I think providers would gain so much traction and have such an advantage using a program like Particle.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's, you know, if you think about the way healthcare data travels with you. So first I will say that like healthcare generally is very fragmented, right? Like I don't feel a ton of loyalty to any particular health system, right? And so, you know, your urgent care is over here, your specialist is over there, your primary care is there. And, you know, God forbid you have to go to the hospital. It's probably like if you're going by ambulance, it's whatever's closest. So your health data kind of lives in all these different facilities. And to your point previously, none of them talk to each other. So the way today that a lot of that data kind of travels is by us as patients in your brain, right? Like, oftentimes you go in, you are responsible for knowing what medications you're on, how often you're supposed to take them, what you've been diagnosed with. And that's just not a very effective way to make data portable. And so, and especially for our elderly population, who we know tend to be the sickest, right? To have the most medications, to have the most diagnoses, just basically because they've been on the earth the longest, right? And so when we look that population, it becomes even more evident that asking them to remember everything, or what I see a lot is like they come in with a small filing cabinet of their paper medical records, because that's the only way that they know to have access and be able to give that to their next provider. We know that that is definitely not scalable. It's definitely not efficient. And it's often not, especially if we're relying on someone's memory, it's just not accurate. So it's not helpful in that sense, right? And so what ends up happening is a clinician does not have the full picture. They got to do their best with what they have access to. What we want to do is give them better and more access so that they can make better decisions, more accurate decisions. And, you know, a lot of times in lieu of having that as a physician, you're going to try to still get the best, clearest picture you can. That might mean ordering duplicative procedures or lab testing because you didn't have access to those previous results or you didn't know that they happened. That increases healthcare costs as well, right? You start to, you know, maybe treatment gets delayed because you're waiting for all these faxes. You're trying to do your due diligence of getting these medical records and it takes a week, 2 weeks, right? And so there's a lot of like confusion around, you know, is this going to be a misdiagnosis? Do I have all the pieces of information I need? Balanced by, okay, how much effort and time and money is it going to take for me to actually get the data I think I do need to make this decision, right? And if that data exists out there already, why shouldn't it be available to that provider at the point of care?
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, as we continue to evolve and we continue to embrace technology more, which has been a big problem in our industry, right?
Yeah.
You go back and you go back to one of the most profound things that Obama said about healthcare, and his biggest regret was picking up what George Bush Jr. put into play for the adoption of electronic medical records, and then him pushing it forward to mandate it by whatever it was, 2015, 2016. And his comment was, my greatest regret was forcing providers into the electronic medical records, because who would have thought that the healthcare industry would have been such a trudge to get them to adapt and to embrace technology, but it's been a battle. And now, I mean, you still have providers who are looking at things like ChatGPT to create their progress notes for them, because they type in two or three words and they say, create a progress note for a patient with diabetes mellitus 2, you know, non-insulin dependent. And they believe that now these templated notes that are being created with all these, you know, links and these resources stated in there are going to support medical necessity, and it's going to support them in a medical malpractice case. Guess what, my friend? You're wrong. The only thing that's going to help you is having a complete and accurate medical record. So I'm always skeptical at the beginning of a conversation when I bring somebody on from a vendor, because I'm always worried. And I mean this sincerely. I'm always worried about, is this going to be a love fest for why Particle is so wonderful and we're the best and we're But I think you did such a great job, you know, of explaining the obstacles that providers face and why using an API platform like yours that can solicit all of this information that's floating out there on the interweb and compile it, deduplicate it, and narrow down to specific diagnoses and medications that patients have been prescribed or diagnosed with, as well as clinical, clinical results of labs, you know, abnormal findings, elevated findings, low findings, imaging, things of that nature, to really help providers to gain that clear, concise picture for really, who is this person sitting on the, you know, bed in front of me?
100%. I mean, you know, the way I kind of think about this is there's a ton out there right now about AI and ChatGPT to help with like these operational things like note-taking. And to me, like, yes, that's helpful. And like, I want physicians to have tools, but at the end of the day, that's not really going to solve the problem in the healthcare industry, right? Like that, all documenting all that stuff in the note is maybe for malpractice, maybe they're doing it for billing and coding, insurance reasons, things like that. But at the end of the day, what we really want to achieve in the healthcare system is I want to be able to see a patient in front of me, look at their data, and be able to essentially predict what is going to happen to them so that I can stop it from happening, right? Like that's ultimately what we are trying to do technically. And the awesome thing about what our comprehensive data foundation allows us to do, and this is kind of like the thing we're working towards, is now that I have this this picture of everything that has been going on with this patient, now I can start to look into that picture and for clues, right? Like, hey, I saw these three pieces of data together. That means it's very likely that this thing is going to happen. Or I saw this piece of data. I thought I was going to see another piece of data that typically follows. I didn't. That's probably a gap in care. So like, for example, I saw a referral. I didn't see the visit. Did that person go? And so the question is like, can we actually use data to surface things to providers that they could not actually figure out themselves without like an extended period of time, or maybe not even at all, right? As opposed to using AI and machine learning to just kind of help with the operational efficiency, which I think is where we are right now, which is still great and still helpful. But ultimately, I think like the real hard problem in healthcare is one single provider, if you gave them an unlimited amount of time, probably could come up with a really good answer for a patient, but we already know they don't have an unlimited amount of time. And there's this huge shortage upcoming in the next 11 years.
Right.
So how can we use data and technology to scale a provider's reach and also their actual like deep ability to diagnose and manage disease? And so that's kind of like the interesting world I live in.
Yeah, no, that is. So let me ask you the $64,000 question. You ever think you'll find yourself back practicing medicine again?
That is a great question. Not really, except for one caveat. I think that the way the healthcare industry is today, I find a lot more, I think, joy and passion in working on these hard systemic problems. So I'm always for people following their passion. I just feel like this has been a really good fit for me. But I also think that like a primary care physician's role in the future is going to look really different than how it looks right now. And I have the future I'm working towards is I would love for that role to be primarily like a data science and implementation role where you are basically, you have access in your tool belt to all of these different predictive analytics and essentially like creating a digital twin of the patient where you can sit down with them and be like, hey, based off all the data points you generated today, and that in the future probably isn't going to be just clinical data. It's probably going to be like where you go get food, like where you shop, where you live, what do you do for work, how much do you exercise, like all of that, those pieces of data, we create it into a digital twin. And then we can actually sit down with a patient and be like, hey, if I let this model run on its own, based on the habits you have today, this is likely what's going to happen. If we change these two or three things, these are what the outcomes are going to look like. And then you can have those conversations with patients to be like, hey, this is why I am recommending this, or this is truly an informed decision about what we think the risk of this is versus not doing it, right? In that world, I think I would love to practice medicine where you can get to that really granular, specific, and actionable insights for a patient.
Yep. So the answer is maybe.
Yeah. As with most questions, I guess, huh?
Absolutely. Fair enough. All right. Well, listen, Dr. Ward, thank you so much for taking time out of what I know is an extremely busy schedule over there at Particle to sit down and explain some of the interoperability obstacles that providers are facing and what you all at Particle are doing to help bridge the gap and to help make the practice of medicine easier and more, I guess we would say, accurate for providers by making sure they have a well-rounded picture of the person on the bed in front of them.
Absolutely. And this has been a blast.
All right. So as I told y'all, quite a dynamic young lady that I was able to coerce into coming on to the program today. As always, I want to say thank you to each and every single one of you for tuning in, logging on, and just hanging out with me for a little while. It's because of all of you that we have gone from a top 3 global podcast to now a top 2% of all global podcasts. So thank you for always hanging out with us and supporting us and keeping us doing what it is that we do. All right, I'll be back later this week with some more guests on The Compliance Guy. So until then, remember, be good to yourself, but more importantly, y'all be good to each other. Take care.
You've been listening to The Compliance Guy. Sean has been doing this for 28 years. He holds 10 national board certifications. He's a partner and the vice president of compliance for Doctors Management, LLC. He's a subject matter expert in federal court. He's lectured at the most prestigious institutions. He's engaged with members of Congress in both chambers. So what we're saying is he's qualified? We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, and review. And we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, you can find us on social media @The Compliance Guy. See you next time on The Compliance Guy.